For Thomas Matters Radio, this is Mark Collier, sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions. You can reach them at 866-888-9724. They're headquartered in Alexandria Pike in Fort Thomas. They've been an awesome partner to work with on For Thomas Matters Radio. I cannot say enough for them, so I'll let Dan Walzer, who's a business manager at Perfect Game USA, do that for me. And Dan says, what sets Omega Processing apart from other providers is service, service, service. And he uses 3 exclamation points, so you know he's serious. I would absolutely recommend Omega to anyone. We have saved quite a bit of money and had the very best service possible. That is Dan Walzer, business manager for Perfect Game USA. If you're a small business and you think that you can be saving on merchant processing prices, if you think that your technology is not up to snuff, you need to be calling Omega Processing Solutions. You can call them again, 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or find them online at omegap.com. Let's go. So today on the show, we've got Fort Thomas City Councilman John Muller, as well as Campbell County Commissioner Tom Lampe, and we're going to talk about needle exchange. It's been a hot topic in the media lately. Northern Kentucky, Campbell County, Kenton County, Grant County, Pendleton County have all passed needle exchange ordinances. Earlier this week, Boone County did not take a motion to discuss it, so it didn't even get voted on. But we're going to talk about the decision to come and make a needle exchange available in Campbell County. And then I think Tom and John both, with their dealings with St. Elizabeth, can give some insight as to, you know, what that looks like, where it'll be set up, and can it come to Fort Thomas? I know that's been floated out by some people. And so we're gonna talk to these guys and see what they think. So I have John Muller and Tom Lampe here in the palatial Fort Thomas Matters podcasting studios. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Fine, Mark. Thanks for having us.
John?
Thank you. Good to be here.
You doing all right?
Very good.
So we finally got a day where it's not raining.
And we're inside the palatial studios. But we're glad to be here.
Well, who planned this one? That was bad planning on my part. But what I want to talk about today, guys, is we've cleared the first hurdle as far as needle exchange that was set up in Senate Bill 192. You had to pass it at a county level, and then you had to pass it at whatever city level that you want to actually have the physical exchange. So we're past the county vote. Tom was a part of that. I want to talk about like the inner workings. You guys both have some good insight to this. John is the Fort Thomas City representative on the Northern Kentucky Independent Health District Board. Tom is also a member of the St. Elizabeth
Healthcare Foundation Board.
So you two have a good inner working knowledge of this kind of thing. So John, let me turn to you first. I know fiscal court, they prefer to have this in Newport at the fiscal courthouse. Is that right, Tom?
Where the health department is.
Tell me why it can or cannot be at the St. Elizabeth campus in Fort Thomas.
Okay, thanks, Mark. So right now, it can only be the only place the syringe access exchange program can take place is in the health center that the health district operates.
Which is where?
Which is in Newport, which is at the fiscal court building. And there's a lot of good reasons why it should be there. So we can talk about those in a minute. If you want me to give a little background.
Yeah, just give me some background, because I think people, you know, they may not have read Senate Bill 192. They just think, well, at St. E, they have the resources, they have the know-how, they have the space, they have the room. Why not just put it in Fort Thomas? Yeah, and you're saying that it literally, per the set of Bill 192, it just can't happen.
It just can't be there. It's not an option.
So tell me why.
In Fort Thomas. So Senate Bill 192 was passed last session. So not this recent budget session. It was passed last session. We had a couple of our great senators sponsor that bill. So Will Schroeder, who our Campbell County senator, was a sponsor. and Chris McDaniel, among other sponsors, got that bill, and they worked a lot of different things into there. Got it through both houses, bipartisan, and then Governor Beshear signed it immediately and made it an executive order. So it took effect immediately. One of the provisions in there, and it's actually at Section 17, Paragraph 5A through C, that's the language that authorizes health districts to, if they choose, to operate needle exchange programs. So that's the language. It's from Senate Bill 192. So flash forward, the Northern Kentucky Independent Health District is our Grant, Campbell, Kenton, and Boone are members of that health district. And
three of those four have passed syringe access exchange ordinances.
Grant has a fully operational program. Kenton passed some with some restrictions relatively recently. Boone obviously just took no action, which has functionally killed it. Tuesday night, was that Tuesday? Fiscal court out there?
It was Monday or Tuesday. Yeah, and I think, and to your point, there was no motion made. There was a 5-hour meeting, just like the one that we had in Campbell County that Tom was a part of, and they had the same cast of characters, you know, doctors, experts, NKY hates heroin type people. So they listened to that, and when it came time to make a motion, there was no motion. And at that point, I don't know, does it just die at that point, Tom?
Yeah, there was no motion made, so there was no motion. There was therefore no second, no vote, so it was silenced.
So, John, to your point, though, that makes up the Northern Kentucky Health District.
Right. And so when Senate Bill 192 gave that authorization to the local health districts, our health district came up with the program. So they developed the program. It's evidence-based. They've got 10 to 15 source documents that they use to develop it. And the program as it exists today, the program has to operate out of each of our health centers upon approval of the county and then city government.
So let's talk about the reasons why you had mentioned that in your introduction, why that might be a good idea.
So if the idea of needle exchange, and I'm sure lots of people have talked about it, if you're listening to this, you're interested in it. It's not about, it's about population health. It's about hepatitis C rates. It's about HIV. It's about the opportunity to try to counsel someone to perhaps, and when they're ready to get help, then the resources are there. So the best evidence is what the health district came up with is all those resources are at the health centers that exist. So these are folks that need to get connected with the health network anyway. They need to get tested for Hep C. They need to get tested for HIV. Perhaps they need to get pregnancy tested. There's a lot of resources that only exist at the health center. So it's good on a number of things. It's also fiscally good for us. It's good for the taxpayer to have this efficient setup already exists and works well. And the needle exchange program, the one that exists, it's open a couple days a week. And Tom can talk more about that since they had more data presented to him. But that's why it can't be in Fort Thomas. 192 authorizes the health district. Our health district's current policy is that they can only operate out of the existing health centers. Ours in Campbell County is in Newport.
So barring like another statewide bill or whatever that would change or amend 192, that's the reason why by law we can't have it in Fort Thomas.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Tom, let's talk about you obviously have a lot more insight than most people on this topic. It's been really trying. I guess I'm just going to start it right there. What's the experience been like for you?
Well, I'll back up even to when I was campaigning and was asked the question, what's the number one issue facing our county? And typically an answer would be economic development, jobs, safety, of course. My answer to that was because of the emergency status of the heroin epidemic, that has escalated to the number one issue in our county. And I've lived it since I've been elected, and it's been a very eye-opening and disturbing to see what heroin's done to our community and to families. I'm going to back up also, when you first hear about needle exchange, I wish we could unring that bell and not call it needle exchange, but call it disease control, because it really has a negative connotation with the needle exchange. And quite frankly, when I first heard it, I was skeptical, like a lot of people. Like, that sounds a little...
It sounds bad.
It sounds bad until you do the research and find out it's not enabling. And evidence can show that. And I don't know how much
we have to... Yeah, what's like the one thing, like the one statistic or the one story that turned you on to, okay, this is the path that we should be going?
Facts, science, studies, communities that have suffered this epidemic.
You talked with Kalfas, Mike Kalfas, a lot.
He's brilliant, and I'm gonna get to your question. Okay. I'm gonna back up also to another base. There's two things that the public needs to know is that the health department is required by state statute to prevent the spread of infectious diseases, and that's what we're talking about here. KRS 211.180 section 1A says that they're required to control the spread of infectious diseases. And to dovetail on what John said, from House Bill 192 came KRH 218A500 sections 5A, B, and C, which states, as John alluded to, that if a syringe access exchange program is going to be operated, the health department is the entity that's going to operate that. Now, to me, they need to operate it in the best way to be successful. And that's without restrictions made up by us in government who don't know healthcare as much as they do.
So you're talking, and John talked about some of these, talking about some of the restrictions that Kenton County has talked about. So like they want a mobile exchange. You feel, and our county fiscal court feels that we need to have it in a stable place that, does this.
The health department is in existence in our building. Statistics have shown people who utilize a needle exchange program, 50% of those people that are going to be using the program are already using our health department for other services. So they're accustomed to coming into our building. It'll be more anonymous. Don't know why I'm concerned about the anonymity of a heroin user, but if you take the mobile unit that's operating 3 hours a week, that window to service the clientele wants to utilize that is very small. It's also very visible in the public. If we were to pull up a van for 3 hours a week and see people going in and out of there, people are walking in and out of the fiscal court building, in and out of restaurants, in and out of libraries. They're on heroin. They're around us every day.
They're driving by us.
Yes, unfortunately they are. But
you rode with the heroin interdiction team recently, haven't you?
I rode with the Newport Police Department. Okay. And it was really eye-opening. I mean, they are aggressively searching out.
What did you see there? What was the biggest thing that
I saw people coming across 471 Bridge, getting off the first exit, who you could look in my amateur eye. I could kind of look at the vehicle, the occupants, and say, that's a very suspicious car. And many of them that we pulled over had expired license plates, illegal turns, but found like one guy was searched and he had a needle in his pocket. Potentially harmful to the officer who searched him. He did supply the information. The officer said that, hey, I do have a needle in here. So he was careful. But
it's scary for the officers, too. I just saw an article somewhere that they have to comb baseball fields for needles before the kids get on the field now.
Yeah, it is sad. And it's everywhere in our community. I mean, it's in Fort Thomas. It's in Newport, Dayton.
Is there any doubt in your mind that fiscal court did the right thing when they passed needle exchange?
I'm sure it's the right thing. If our listeners have a chance to even watch the recorded session from April 20th, it was over 5 hours, but it was comprehensive. It dealt with it wasn't just about needle exchange. It was about our comprehensive response to the heroin epidemic, and it was based on the six main topics by the heroin impact response team, dealing with advocate, prevent, support, treat, reduce supply, and protect. Needle exchange fell under the protection and got a lot of attention. but there was a lot of experts there in the medical field. There was a doctor from NKU who was a scientist that had scientific evidence that these are successful in controlling HIV and hepatitis. Dr. Kalfas lives it every day. There was a lengthy article about him becoming the addiction doctor by accident. He didn't plan on that. He's also our detention center doctor. And he sees a great need for this exchange program to prevent. He sees HIV coming. And
that's scary.
And it is scary. We've been identified as...
Has he treated? Do you know if he's treated any HIV?
I don't know. I can't answer that. I don't know that he's shared that with us. But
I mean, that's how it happens. There was a report that CDC put out recently. I don't know if you've taken a look at that or not. But basically, they said that Kentucky is ripe. It's ripe for the HIV outbreak like it happened in Scott County, Indiana. It's ripe to happen here.
Yes, I did. They put out the top counties in the country. And Campbell County ranked 212th in that. There was actually 54 counties.
Oh, I didn't know they did it by county.
There were 54 counties in Kentucky's identified. Campbell was identified in northern Kentucky, along with Grant. Another statistic that came out.
Wait, go back to that. It's number 212 out of every county in the United States.
Yes, that's based on United States.
Wow. And you've got Wolf County at number one. Breathitt, number two, Perry, number four. I mean, that's scary.
Another statistic that was quoted was the hepatitis C rates that went from 2014 to 2015. And the 2015 data shows the 41071 zip code.
That's Newport.
It's Newport, joined Dayton, Kentucky, as one of the highest rates in northern Kentucky.
And that's Hep C, which is, and you'll know these figures better than me. If we're taking care, when I say we, I mean as a county, we're taking care of a Hep C patient, it's $100,000.
So I think it's about $80,000 to cure, to be treated for Hep C. And HIV is worse. That number is $600,000 to $800,000 for a lifetime.
So John, you talked about that. That's the financial aspect of this. So when we've done some podcasts before, and mm-hmm. in your field, you talk about, and you're going to have to correct me on this, the model of research and observe, and what is that? It's observe.
Plan, do, act.
Plan, do, act. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So when you apply plan, do, act to this scenario, how do you analyze this? Is there any doubt in your mind that Campbell County did the right thing?
No, not at all. They did the right thing. I applaud them. I sent Tom a text right away and Judge Pendry, and I saw Painter not long after. I think they did the right thing. And it is an emotional thing, but this is about public health. It's about population health. And we're all trying to raise our families here and make this the greatest place that we can have influence to make it. And it is a great place. But this scourge of heroin is not just the heroin. The hepatitis C rate, as Tom might have said, it's 20 times the national average in our counties. And hepatitis C, I know Tom's been through the data, so he knows it better. 80 grand seems a little low to me. I think lifetime, I work in the senior living, and we see people all the time that are living with the lasting lifelong effects of hepatitis C, and we usually see them towards the end of their life. It's very, very costly. And kind of back to the fiscal approach to this, even the humanitarian and fiscal approach, those folks are on Medicare and Medicaid. So we're paying for it. And some prevention, this seems like easy prevention. And I'm sorry, kind of go back to this idea of mobile. Can I comment on that just a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the mobile unit,
which is the one that Kenton County wanted that.
Which is what Kenton County passed. I mean, that if we're faced with the idea of, okay, should we do something is better than nothing. Okay, because this might come before the health district board again. Dr. Sadler, we're all working on it. It's the number one topic there at the meetings that I've been to since Mayor Haas asked me to represent Fort Thomas there. There would be an option to perhaps expand what the health district came up with as a best practice system. But look, we've got the opportunity not to in Campbell County right now. We've got the opportunity to go for the best. And the best is the best care, because those people are accessing the people that would go there, have all the resources they need to, you know, maybe get into a treatment counselors, which some of the people in Grant County have. I talked to Dr. Sadler about that today and preparing for this. And the resources are there to manage the other effects of IV drug use.
And John's right. We have staff in place. You know, are the taxpayers helping pay for the health department? Yes, they are. But if they were to have to be in another location at another facility, at St. Elizabeth, for example, there'd be increased costs associated with it. We have the staff on hand who can provide them immediate other services as well, or offer. And one of the goals is, of course, get those person into treatment. Some people have said that might be the only non-user, non-addicted person that person sees all week or all day.
And so, that's what the mobile unit doesn't offer. So the mobile unit would simply be needle exchange, and they could do hep C test. No, I take that back. They could do HIV testing. They can do no hep C testing. They can do no counseling. They cannot offer, just what Tom said, you can't offer the treatment specialists. They can't be on the mobile unit.
So it's past the county level. It goes to the city level now. You're saying that per 192, it can't be in Fort Thomas. So as a Fort Thomas City Council person, let's say that you're now talking to a Newport City Commissioner. What advice or what do you tell them? What do you put in front of them?
Yeah, I'd ask as a Campbell County resident that they strongly consider approving this. The program is evidence-based. It works. It's good for our county.
Tom, do you have any insight as to what's going to happen in Newport?
They're going through the due diligence process we all went through, and I just I would encourage them to try to gather as much information and data. And I trust they are. I've talked to several of the members.
I know the mayor's on record. The mayor, Jerry Peluso, is on record. He sees that this is a worthy program. And, you know, I think a lot of people, when it comes down to it, it's not in my backyard syndrome, but he's the mayor and he's on board.
If you listen to the testimony that we listen to, and listen to the experts, listen to the medical experts, the data, it makes sense. And to do nothing does not make any sense at all. We know where we're headed now without a program. And if we were to implement this program, we can revoke it at any time by vote. So it's not like we're stuck with this forever.
Plus, I mean, there's a sunset provision in, what is it?
There is.
December 18th.
Well, we can yank it earlier if we want to. But what I've been told, especially by St. Elizabeth and the health department, is if we're able to implement this out of our building, let the health department do their job, it will be successful, and there won't be a need for a sunset. We have it in there if we need it, but I really think that we can be leaders and have the most successful program in the state.
Is this what you signed up for?
It is. Serving the community, and yes, public health and safety is always one of the top priorities. There's some side things I didn't sign up for.
Has it been stressful?
Yes, it's stressful. Yeah, it's stressful. You try to do what's right. You see this just destroying our community and families. And, you know, I talk to Holly Specht on a regular basis. You know her. She lost her son, Nicholas.
Northern Kentucky hates heroin.
They are passionate and they are loving and they are hurting people. And they have done a great job bringing, you know, the awareness of the addiction to our community. And it's, you know, addiction is a disease, and it's destroying a lot of families.
Are we going to beat it?
Sometimes your brain goes there and say, how are we going to win this thing? But we can't stop trying, or we're not going to beat it. So things like this will help. And, you know, there's been heroin epidemics in the past, and they've come and gone. This one's a lot more severe, as you know.
What's causing it?
Have you read the book Dreamland by Sam Quinones?
No, he just, where did he speak?
He was just at NKU for a couple of functions that I did actually go watch him speak, and was part of a breakfast that he had the next day. It came from a combination of the prescription drug craze, you know, in the last 10, 15 years with OxyContin and the pill mills and the pain medicine docs.
Opioid stuff.
Opioid stuff. Expensive OxyContins, Vicodins. But mass prescription, you could go get your wisdom teeth out and they'd give you a prescription for 60 Vicodin and you needed maybe three or five.
Right.
So then it became a currency. You became addicted and he uses that as a big part of the book. And then there's a side, the second part of it is talks about this dealer network from Jalisco, Mexico, not Afghanistan, but a small town in Mexico that, in his words, they develop networks in Midwestern and small town USA where they deliver heroin like pizza. You call a dispatch number, they deal in small quantities, they put the heroin in balloons in their mouth. You call them, they'll meet you at Burger King. They spit out six balloons and it's $100 and you're on your way.
What's the name of that book again?
Dreamland by Sam Quinones. Unlike big cartels that dealt with New York or Chicago, LA, they did a lot of, I think Columbus, Ohio and Portsmouth, Ohio are strongly depicted in the book. They used small quantities, small amounts of money compared to the cartels, and no violence, no guns. So their drug busts were minimal.
Sure.
They'd be deported probably. And then guess what? There'd be new people from Jalisco, Mexico that had the territory. So I highly recommend Dreamland.
So John, it's obviously been, you know, you've been able to look at it from a little bit more of a far than Tom has, because Tom's had to be a decision maker on this, but there's no doubt that this is an emotional issue. And I don't know how you get away from that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, hopefully taking the time to look at the issue, right? Just as Tom did, as Campbell County Fiscal Court did, and hopefully as Newport, along with other areas in Northern Kentucky. You know, I wish, as Tom mentioned, wish we could not call it needle exchange. That's an emotional thing. When you bring it up, your initial reaction is maybe unfavorable, but it's about so much more than that. It seems to me it's about so much more than that. It's population health. We're defining our future with us passing the resolutions, using the program, the Northern Kentucky Health.
When you say we, we're talking locally.
Local rule. Local rule is setting it up, right? And isn't that what we want, is to be able to have local rule to affect our populations? We know us best. And I think one of the risks is it's so emotional. And if we just throw it out, it's a terrible idea. Look, it won't be if, it'll be when we have the HIV bloom, just like what happened in Indiana. The governor, executive order. So if we want Frankfurt, executive order, it takes us out of it. And they come in, brings the CDC in from Washington. That's what we're going to get to, not if, but when. So let us take care of our people, and this is a great opportunity to get that done.
So I think exchange is the word where some of these restrictions that maybe other places are instituting, one for one has been something that has been floated. It's a term. Tom, where do you stand on one for one? I'll just simply put it at that.
One for one would be a goal of the program, an absolute goal of the program. It's unrealistic to have that from the start.
And one for one, we're talking about you bring in one needle,
right.
You get one needle.
Right. And that literally is a goal. I'm going to quote some statistics in a minute. But if you think about somebody starting in the program and they come to the visit you and they sit and they're asked, are you sharing? And they say yes. And who are you sharing with? And literally doctors have told me, they've heard them say, well, my brother and my uncle. Well, or maybe even somebody else. But let's say there's three people using that needle. How many times a day are you using? Four times a day. There's really 12 needles needed there for everybody to have a clean needle. So what the health department said at our meeting is maybe the initial meeting, we give them 40 needles. And when they come back, we hope we'll get as many as we can, but we give them another 40 needles maybe. And as callous as that sounds, once again, the goal is a successful needle exchange program. Louisville, I know, started a program, and I know at one point it was 12-1. Statistics from last year, I think it was...
You get 12 needles, you bring in 12 needles and you get one?
No. They were giving out 12 and, and getting one back.
Okay.
By around May of 2014 through December or through November, that ratio had gone from 8-1 to 2-1. And by the end of December, it was 1.2 needles to one. So it was darn near the 1-1 exchange.
What were they attributing to that? It was the program was working.
People wanted to use the program. I truly mean this. It's a more responsible heroin user that's going to utilize this program. He's also going to seek help, but they want the program to work. That's why there's been very rare, if few, if any incidents at these needle exchange programs. There's rumors out there that Lexington had all these incidents. Not true. We talked to the Lexington police chief directly. Our chief did.
I think when this whole thing came out, Louisville and Lexington were like the first two in Kentucky after 192 passed. And I think WDRB in Louisville did like an undercover thing. So like that was the first real like coverage there was. And I, you know, when you see like a pinhole camera taking pictures, like it doesn't look good, but like I don't think the vast majority of people have that information. You obviously have been exposed to that. You've been exposed to a lot of information that the average person, you know, maybe attending a fiscal court meeting here and there or reading about it in the newspaper or on Fort Thomas Matters, they don't have the access that you have.
Well, I take it very seriously, and I studied it a lot. You know, and people might throw an argument out that, well, if you look at HIV, the spread of HIV, nationwide statistics say it's spread in a certain amount of manner. Well, you have to look at areas with intravenous drug usage epidemics and how HIV and Hep C is spread there. It's spread through dirty needles. We had a very touching moment in there. We had a mother of a daughter who died from a dirty needle, not from an overdose, but from a dirty needle and the disease she acquired through that. You listen to stories like that, and you listen to statistics from the healthcare professionals, it's easy to do the right thing, even when you got some people on your case encouraging you not to do that.
What was the main pushback that you were getting?
You know, a lot of you hear the word enabling, and it's not enabling. Mark, I would suggest you go to the American Society of Addiction Medicine's website, where they have studies that consistently show that the needle exchange programs work, and there's not been an increase in drug use or an increase in injection because of the needles. They're just able to use clean needles, and the spread of HIV and Hep C is slowed down. So,
and then another thing, and then we'll kind of tie a bow on this. Some of the opponents to the exchange, you know, brought up your positions with Saint-Ed. Do you want to clarify that? Like, what board are you on there?
Yeah, I'm on the foundation side and serve on the business support committee. We are a fundraising unit, if you will, for the hospital and their initiatives.
So you're not like forming policy.
No, I'm not on the operating board. I don't set policy. I'm not compensated. It's really a volunteer position on the foundation board side of it. So it's out in community relations and raising money.
Well, to transition to the city side, with our 150-year anniversary that we have next year, we've got to raise $750,000 for that. So can we get you back on?
Good luck, John.
Can we get you back into Fort Thomas on that? You've got some experience on that. John, do you want to tie a bow on this?
Ooh, tie a bow. No, I appreciate you having us on. I appreciate the conversation, and thank you to the people that are listening. It's a big issue. I'd like to, again, congratulate Campbell County Fiscal Court on passing this, and I hope it continues to pass where it is the only place that can be authorized to work.
In Newport, in the health district.
In
the health center, which is on Monmouth. What's the address? I don't even know. 1098?
Yes.
Yeah, 1098 Monmouth Street. So Tom Lampe, Commissioner, Campbell County Commissioner, John Muller, Fort Thomas City Councilman. Thank you guys for being on the show. You can always see Fort Thomas Matters wherever you get your podcasts, on iTunes, Google Play, FortThomasMatters.podbean.com, or just go to FortThomasMatters.com, and we've got a little tab at the top. Go right underneath where it says Omega Processing. They are our sponsor. You know Omega well, Tom.
Sure. Todd McHugh.
Give our sponsor a little love right here.
Hey, great Fort Thomas business, great employer, great taxpayer, and good friends as well.
Well, Tom Lampe, John Muller, thanks for being on the show. And this is Mark Collier.